Welcome back to another episode of Stacking Denny's. I'm Jordan McAvey of Roto Baller, my co-host Nick Giffen of the Action Network, Brad Keselowski in Victory Lane at Darlington Raceway. After Tyler Reddick and Chris Buescher once again having a little heartbreak at the end of a race, misses out on the win. Reddick, also, you know, having the dominant race car, those two taken out. Keselowski is the one that benefits, grabs the first victory in over 100 races for him. His first win since becoming part owner of Roush Fenway Keselowski Racing. Overall, though, a good day for Fords. Two Fords in the top three. We had Josh Berry finish third. We had Chase Briscoe finish fifth. We had Justin Haley finish ninth. Michael McDowell came home with a top 10. All of the Fords that did not wreck all finished 22nd or better. And Nick, you know, one thing that we have discussed extensively on the show is this is the point of the season where things change. So before we talk about Keselowski and what that means for him in the playoffs, do you think Ford has found something and that we need to now kind of focus a little bit more on Ford after it's been Toyota and Chevy for so long?
No, I don't think Ford has found something. I think Darlington is a driver's track and there's a lot of good Ford drivers, mm-hmm. right? You know, a lot of these Ford guys that have struggled this year aren't because they're bad drivers. They just are struggling with Ford equipment. But Darlington, you can kind of make things happen as a driver. And so I think that's pretty important. And then we saw, you know, Kansas when those Fords, they really came to life at night. So mm-hmm. I think it's a couple more special circumstances. And I think they'll be really good at Charlotte because of the whole night thing, like right. we saw last year with Ryan Blaney winning. So, you know, I'm a little bummed that Ford did come to life at Darlington because I was hoping to get more value on Ford for the 600.
Yeah, it was nice but though.
I think a lot of it's just drivers. Like Noah Gregson's a really good driver at this track. Michael McDowell is good at this track. Josh Berry, certainly surprising, but was really good, and he's obviously a talented driver. Joey Logano had a great day until the speeding penalty right at the end. Todd Gillen, this is a great track for him in terms mm-hmm. of Darlington. So Chase Briscoe, same thing, like really good track for him. It's a really good track for a lot of the Ford drivers. And obviously Keselowski and Buescher. At this point, we have to put Buescher in Darlington, right? Buescher had several bad Darlington races to start the next gen era, but his last two have been stellar. So yeah. At this point, we're 100% into Buescher is good at Darlington territory.
Yeah. One guy you mentioned was Todd Gilliland. You know, he was legitimately a top 10, top five car in that race. His pit crew absolutely mm-hmm. screwed him. Like, he deserves to be completely pissed at that pit crew. Comes away
it's
with
like
a
the Stenhouse,
place finish.
You know, it's like Stenhouse at Texas or something. Was a top five car, and his pit crew screwed him every time. Same thing with Todd Gilliland this weekend. Gilly passed Hamlin for seventh or sixth at one point in stage one or two, and then, you know, kind of came back through the field again. It's just terrible, terrible pit crew, you know, strategy, stops, everything. So big shout outs to Todd Gilliland. He was really fast. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of Front Row Motorsports, that's something that kind of news broke after we recorded last week was Michael McDowell is leaving Front Row Motorsports mm-hmm. to join Spire next year. And now there's, you know, a bunch of rumors going on what's actually going to happen with all these charters. You know, the latest thing I saw is Stuart Haas is going to completely get out of NASCAR. Obviously nothing's confirmed yet, but, I don't know about you, but McDowell to Spire was pretty surprising to me. I thought he was going to stay at Front Row for sure. And then to move to Spire was a little bit even more surprising for me, but obviously, you know, we saw, this is kind of reminding me of what we saw with Justin Haley last year. You know, we all questioned when Haley was leaving college and we said, you know, okay, you're going college to Rick Ware. That's quite the downgrade. Mm-hmm. And I think that right now McDowell going from Front Row to Spire is a downgrade, but I'm telling you what, Justin Haley made the right decision. Rick Ware Racing is better off than college racing right now. And definitely has more upside. And we'll see whether that's, you know, that's going to come true with McDowell as well. Were you surprised when that news broke last week?
1,000,000%. That was never on my radar.
Yeah.
Totally surprised. But obviously with – and, you know, I hadn't really been keeping up with that specific news. You kind of informed me of the fact that Stuart Haas and Front Row – or, yeah, furniture, no, front row, one of these F rows, front row, we're potentially going to be merging. And then after, you know, thinking about the fact that, yeah, there's this potential merger, it does kind of make sense for McDowell to, like, I wouldn't say be the odd man out, but it just makes sense for him to move on, whether that's Spire or somewhere else, just because he kind of built the team up, the front row team up, but now it's changing. And you have to think, if front row is going to be a four car team, that means McDowell gets less attention than as a two car team. And he may even not necessarily be the team leader at that point. If Briscoe is part of that, or, you know, if Noah Gregson continues to perform as he's performed with Stuart Haas and is part of that merger. And there's just a lot of young names there as well that could be involved in this. Obviously, you have Todd Gilliland. Chase Briscoe is still a young guy. Noah Gregson's young. And then remains to be seen with Barry and Priest. You know, Barry is a little older, but not like old. He's like 33 or something. And Priest, I think, is in his lower 30s or upper 20s. So it's not a super old Stuart Haas roster now that Harvick and Almirola are gone. Mm-hmm. So you kind of got to think, like, if you're McDowell, what is the plan here with this merger? And I do think it makes sense for him to move. It certainly was shocking. Not expected at all. Mm. But yeah, I think it makes sense for him to move. And moving to Spire is interesting because we know Spire is not going to have Zane Smith next year. It's going to be a three-car team with LaJoy and Hosovar. So McDowell almost takes over the flagship, you know, spot at Spire from LaJoy, because he's just flat out been better than Corey LaJoy. And I know Spire maybe's had a slightly worse equipment overall, but there's a lot of big investment going into Spire as well. I think, you know, there's a little bit of Andretti Global / Gainbridge that is going to potentially be involved with that team in the future. So there's that kind of thing. So yeah, I think there's a lot of, this is going to be a banner year for landscape changes for NASCAR Cup Series. And one thing I did see today from Daily Downforce was in the rumor mill that two charters from SHR are going to go to Trackhouse and two are going to go to Front Row. And Stuart Haas Racing is going to be no more in the Cup Series, but they still will be running in the Xfinity. That's the latest rumor I've seen. Obviously, that's just a rumor.
Yeah, I know there were some tweets going around from, you know, insiders of the series that said this silly season is going to get quite silly. And I mean, it definitely got started there with McDowell going to Spire. You know, that was out of nowhere, but we saw, like, he was an integral part of Front Row Motorsports and building them up from, you know, backmarker car to getting a Daytona 500 win to now all of a sudden they're a weekly top 15 threat. So he's been a big part of that, and he should be doing well with Spire there as well. But yeah, this is going to get really, really interesting on where this whole charter thing ends up. And I mean, there's even more changes coming next year. You know, they just announced the in-season tournament. Fox is no longer broadcasting the Coke 600. That's, I think, a great move for the sport in general. And I think it just underscores the how much Fox actually cares about this sport.
Fox or fucks, because that's kind of what it sounded like.
Yeah. But sticking here to the end of Darlington real quick. So we had some more drama, a couple more instances of drama. Ryan Blaney was not happy with William Byron at all. Actually said some, like, literally said he's going to go kill those guys. Which
I was like, that's probably not something you should say on the radio.
I'll tell you what, I was a little surprised he didn't get a fine today for not only that, but then going up and almost hitting Byron under yellow. Like,
100%. Yeah.
I thought
there was a fine in the making.
Yeah. I don't understand why he got a little bit of a pass there. And then obviously, you know, the issue there at the end with Reddick and Buescher, and, you know, Buescher coming up, and that, he was rightfully pissed off.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, you know, the replay does show Buescher in the wall before Reddick actually squeezes him. So, like, I think there's still that aspect of it. Like, obviously, Reddick took the blame. Reddick is at fault there. And
it was 100% Reddick's fault. Yeah. And I don't care if Buescher was in the wall ahead of time. That's more like the, I'm riding the wall, and if I have a little contact, yeah, it doesn't matter anyway. It's the, like, the classic Darlington stripe that doesn't matter. So, yeah, I mean, that's 100% on Reddick. Yeah. 100%.
And like I said, Buescher is has every right to be pissed off, because that's 2 weeks in a row he mm-hmm. probably should have won the race. And now when we look at the playoff standings, Keselowski's locked in, and this kind of changes things a little bit, because if we get a surprise winner, which is definitely in the cards, someone good's going to be out here. Buescher's now only 15 yep. points above the cut line. So I completely understand the point Buescher's trying to make. You know, Reddick already has a win. At the same point, though, I don't particularly like Buescher's reasoning there, saying from my perspective, what Buescher was trying to say is that Reddick should have raced him so much cleaner because Reddick already had a win. And I think that's absolute bullshit. I think you have to fight for the win. You're not given a win. And my interpretation of what Buescher was trying to say there was, you should have given me the win. Now, I could be completely wrong, but
I don't think he was saying you should have given me the win. I think he was just saying, look, you have a win and I don't. I can't take away from you as much as you can take something away from me. So we're on uneven circumstances. Now, I'm not saying that's a valid reason. I'm just saying, you know, certainly it is, there is a, like, almost a power dynamic there, right? Where, like, Reddick holds the power mm-hmm. because he already has a playoff spot. He has a win. The other thing is, there's still, like, 11 laps to go or something.
Yeah.
Reddick didn't have to do it then. He could, and he was catching him. So, Chris Buescher had 100,000,000% every right to be mad. And I honestly don't care what the reason was. Reddick was just 100% at fault.
And I feel like this race also brought out instances like Reddick, like we said, like, I think there was more than 10 laps left when Reddick made that move and, you know, tried to get the lead back. But William Byron was another one that was constantly being super aggressive on restarts. You know, he was constantly taking people three wide, and it was just almost like, and we saw the instance with Truex and Blaney, you know, obviously that was completely William Byron's fault. You know, I feel like these guys were definitely being a lot more aggressive than we are typically seeing out of them, you know, this season. And, you know, maybe it's just Darlington that brings that out of people.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Sorry. There's like some loud noise that's going on around here, and I don't know what it is. I can hear it through my headphones. That's how loud really? It is.
I can't.
Yeah. Anything. So I know, well, you know, I muted the microphone when it was going on, but I don't hear it now, but I was just very confused what was going on. So I just missed what you said, 'cause I was trying to figure out what the heck was going on.
I was just talking about, aggressiveness, aggressive on restarts and everything, you know, Byron and that issue. Mm-hmm. And then obviously Reddick, but yeah, Buescher, yeah. You know, 2 weeks in a row like that, like I completely understand for someone that is, he is one of like the most soft-spoken, you know, even keel guys. For him to get that upset,
clean racer too.
Yeah.
A clean racer. Just, too.
I mean, that was, I'm not going to say nice to see, but I liked seeing it, if that makes sense. Like, yeah, you know, we always talk about these cardboard cutout guys.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I said before, few other guys to mention here. Denny Hamlin walked away with a fourth place finish after he said it's one of the worst performances of the season for them. Just shows how good that 11 car is running right now. He led another lap, which extends his streak to 17, which I saw a tweet that there's like five or six drivers that have more races in a row led than Denny Hamlin. So I know we were looking for someone wow. to look at that. Bubba Wallace gets a much needed good run after, you know, the last month of bad runs. Alex Bowman gets another top 10. And like I said, Justin Haley comes away with the first ever top 10 finish for Rick Ware Racing on a non-super speedway track. Ross Chastain shattered my dreams. He was my only post-qualifying bet other than Christopher Bell outright. Was Ross Chastain yep. top 10. I felt really good about that. Of course, he finished 11th. And I don't even know how, because he was running 11th when the Buescher and Reddick thing happened. And then they had to come in and pit. And then I look and he's still 11th. And I'm like, how in the fuck are you this slow? Not quite on my dead to me list, but he's getting there.
I'll tell you what, William Byron is going to win that race if that last caution doesn't come out.
Yeah.
William Byron is going to win that race because he split the stage that last run exactly in half. Whereas, the leaders came in a few laps early because they don't want to get overcut by somebody else coming in early and gaining 2 seconds a lap. But then you make it up on the back end, as we saw a couple drivers do, like Ryan Blaney and Bubba Wallace in stage one. They made it up on the back end by splitting the first stage exactly in half. Mm-hmm. Byron was coming. And I did look at it. He came from 9 seconds back out when he came out of the pits. And at first was gaining, a few tenths a lap. But then Keselowski hit traffic and Byron's tires really came in. Because the first lap or two, you're still getting them up to temperature when you come out of the pits. Byron was making up a second a lap. And he cut it from 9 to 6 seconds and was coming. And it's the exact same reason Blaney made up so much time and Bubba made up so much time. Is because all those cars in front of you catch lap traffic halfway through the stage, and it makes it harder for them. And you have the fresher tires. You can slice and dice through traffic. So if that stays green to the end, William Byron wins, even though he did not have the best car. He certainly had a borderline top five car. He was running around 4th to 6th, a lot of that race. But that's one of those things where I think the medium tire wear tracks, traditionally for me had always been really interesting because you could take 0, 2, or 4 tires. And then I was like, well, the low tire wear tracks, they kind of suck because you just stay out or whatever. But and that is the case. But what happens in the low tire wear tracks, and we saw this with Texas, is you just run it really long and hope for a caution.
Yep.
And then, everybody comes and pits anyway because they just ran a bunch of laps or whatever. So and then there's the high tire wear tracks like Darlington, where strategy obviously comes into play and you get all sorts of strategies. And so I actually hate when a caution flies towards the end of a high tire wear race, because then it just puts everybody on the same strategy.
Yep.
But it is interesting how NASCAR, over the years, there's always been strategy in NASCAR, but over the years, low, medium, high tire wear, they've all turned into strategy races. Everything is strategy these days. And it's pretty wild.
Yeah. And that used to be one of the big things that people really liked about the old road course races is how much the strategy. So now we're seeing it pretty much on a weekly basis. Because even on the tracks where tire wear doesn't matter and it's all about track position, there's still strategy in that. We saw it at Martinsville. We saw it every week, like I said, these teams doing things to get track position. So 92.4%. Yes, that was a good race on Jeff Gluck's poll. Obviously, another great race for the season. Another great race at Darlington. I don't think there's any debate there on whether that was a good race. Just overall, top to bottom, great racing all around. Darlington is one of those tracks where every time we go there, it's going to be a good race. Might not be a great race, but it's going to be a good race. Kyle Larson had some issues in that race. He's still the points leader, though, 30 points over Martin Truex Jr. after 13 races. We're officially halfway through the regular season now. Denny Hamlin jumps up a spot to third, Chase Elliott, William Byron round out the top five. Like I said, though, the cut line is now Bubba Wallace is out of the playoffs, 6 points below Chase Briscoe, who is the final guy in right now. Kyle Busch has an 8-point advantage over the cut line. Buescher has 15, and then we have those group of guys that are pretty much in. It's going to take a lot. Chastain, Bowman, Blaney, Ty Gibbs, who finished second last week, almost got the win. And then Martin Truex Jr.
Best career finish, yeah.
Yeah, Martin Truex Jr. has a 140-point lead on the bubble, so he's good. But the guys on the outside looking in right now, Bubba Wallace, Joey Logano, Noah Gragson, 83 points out. Austin Cindric, 90 points out. Josh Berry, 92. This is going to get very interesting whether Logano isn't able to point his way in to the champion or to the playoffs. And obviously, Bubba Wallace has plenty of speed, but we just saw it. If you hit a rough patch like that team has done over the past 2 months, you're going to find yourself in this position where you're not in the playoffs. And if there's any surprise winner now, that line is just going up one more driver. So this is going to be very interesting to look at. Honestly, though, once again, I think Logano, I think if you're a Joey Logano fan, you have to be really concerned about whether he makes the playoffs. Like I said, half the regular season's gone. He's 30 points down beneath that cut line that could move up and make him even further out. So something to keep an eye on, because he's one of those drivers that typically isn't getting a ton of stage points this year either.
Yeah, I mean, Joey Logano, Bubba Wallace, they both have and even Christopher Bell, they all have obviously Bell's a win, but just pointing out where they are in the standings for points. They all have just like in the 50s in stage points. Yep. 56 for Logano, 52 for Logano, 56 for Bubba Wallace, 53 for Christopher Bell. And you go up a couple spots, Kyle Busch, 51. So those guys are running where, you know, and to be fair, Keselowski is 52, Ross has 53, but they're doing much better in terms of the points because they have finishes. And honestly, Joey, Bubba, those guys, they have more stage points than Chris Buescher. But it's been about finishing, closing things out, right? Bubba Wallace has four finishes of 29th or worse this year. Joey Logano has four finishes of 28th or worse this year. Four finishes of 28th or worse, plus a 21st and a 22nd and a 19th, which doesn't help at all. So the finishes aren't there for these guys, but they're certainly running where, I mean, Alex Bowman has 40 stage points and he's ninth in the standings because he's consistently getting those eighth to honestly everything's eighth place or better. And then he has like a couple 17th to 20th place finishes and only two bad finishes. So Alex Bowman has just consistently found his way towards the back half of the top 10 and a few top fives.
I'm going to spoil this.
Everybody had a Bowman has 67 or more stage points.
Guess who has the most top 10s this year?
Alex Bowman
and William Byron. They both have 8.
Yep.
Which, you know, and that is the, I think Alex Bowman, that's the quietest series leading top 10 total ever in the history of 13 races of NASCAR. That is the quietest anybody's ever been.
I agree with that.
I feel like you could ask me before I looked at that, you could ask me earlier today how many top 10s Alex Bowman has this year. I'd be like, probably about 2 or 3. And he's sitting there with 8. I don't remember if he got any like at the Super Speedways or not.
Yeah, I don't remember. And let me look for it.
Second at Daytona.
Driver rating on non-drafting ovals. Alex Bowman is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14th in driver rating on non-drafting ovals. So
he's not,
you know, certainly all those top 10s are a little bit better than he's been running this year.
He's not running extremely well, but you look at, so since Bristol over the last 9 races, he has 7 top 10s, 8th or better in 7 of those races.
Yeah. Pretty crazy.
That is.
But yeah, I mean, like I said, I think there's, like all the way up through 9th place, which is Alex Bowman and Joey Logano down in 17th place, they've all just kind of been equal in stage points with the exception of Chase Briscoe, who only has 27 and who's been kind of like Alex Bowman, maybe outperforming where he has been running on average this season. But certainly much improved, right? And Noah Gregson, of course, has that 35-point penalty. If not for that, he'd be at 274 points, which is a lot closer to Joey Logano, not ahead of him, but you know, I think Noah Gregson and everybody behind him is going to have to win to get in at this point because there's just such a big gap from Noah Gregson to Chase Briscoe, right? I mean, that's a 90-point gap, almost 90-point gap. It's 90 to Cindric. It's 83 to Noah Gregson. So that's almost a 2-race gap if you just in terms of like finishing position, not counting stage stuff. But these guys really aren't getting stage points between Gregson and Chase Briscoe anyway. So
yeah,
that's like a 2-race gap there. Yeah. It's like a 2-race gap there between Gregson and his teammate Chase Briscoe. So Joey Logano or better, I think can point their way in, but Gregson or worse, I think, needs to win to get in at this point.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, you know, the win for Keselowski is probably the biggest, like the biggest sigh of relief goes to that team. Cause mm-hmm. you know, they're with that win, they would be like if you just took the points and you didn't lock them into the playoffs here, they are only above the cut line by 22 points or mm-hmm. 28. So getting that win is obviously massive for Keselowski because he could have easily, you know, not made the playoffs this year if he had a streak of bad races. So definitely big for that team. Hopefully Buescher can get in there. You know, RFK, I saw a graphic before we went live. Obviously, Jacobs Racing, Hendrick Motorsports are the two best organizations this year, but they were doing it by average finish by organization. RFK was number three. Yep. As far as average finish, and Penske, I want to say was like sixth between Blaney and Logano. They have like an average finish, like 18 or and Cindric, an average finish, like 19 point something.
Yeah. I mean, Cindric only has one finish better than 15th. That ain't good.
That's not good.
Yeah. Especially for a Penske car.
And like, obviously Penske's been down, but Cindric's also just absolute garbage.
The only thing propping him up is Super Speedways, right? He has two stage wins in Super Speedways, and he has a fourth place at Atlanta. I should say drafting tracks, not Atlanta's not a Super Speedway, but he has two stage wins on drafting tracks and a fourth place at Atlanta. That's the only thing putting him 20th in points, right? Without those two stage wins, I mean, that's 20 stage points right there. He has 38 mm-hmm. stage points, which, you know, is 32 more than Noah Gregson, and Gregson's ahead of him in the points with a 35-point penalty.
Yep.
Yeah. Without all that, I mean, he's way behind Noah Gregson. And if you take away those stages, I mean, he's sitting back there in 22nd, 23rd down there with Gillen Dowell kind of stuff. Like, he's a front row driver in Penske equipment right now.
Yeah. But yeah, like we said, Gregson and them, it's hard. They're going to have to win anyone behind Gregson and behind. The problem is, looking at the schedule, you know, there's really I think it's going to take a lot for us to get a surprise winner out of Daytona, outside of Daytona, because there's really not a track left where I can sit there and say, like, the chances of a surprise winner there is like more than minimal, you know?
And here's the thing. The only other tracks I could see that happening is guys that aren't even championship eligible, like AJ Allmendinger or mm-hmm. Shane Van Gisbergen.
Yeah, exactly. Outside of, you know, like some crazy, like Pocono turn into a
fuel mileage
race, or, you know, Indianapolis going mm-hmm. too long and having to call it for darkness or something crazy like that. Just don't see it happening. Or like, obviously we have Sonoma in there and something could happen there, but that's really the only chance I think we have for some of these other guys. So I mean, definitely what I'm rooting for now is a McDowell win somewhere to spice up these playoffs, and the points pointing their way in. But you know, other than that, you got anything on the standings there?
No, not much else. I guess, you know, going all the way down to the back of the standings, Zane Smith dead last among full-time drivers, Harrison Burton second to last, and then Justin Haley. But remember, he had that DQ from COTA where he actually had a top 15 finish, I think it was. So he would be much higher up as well. And then Austin Dillon is behind Daniel Hemric.
But didn't Dillon have a penalty?
Did he? No, he just had a ton of bad luck at the start of the year. Okay. Dillon had a penalty, I think, last year or something.
Okay. Yeah. Austin Dillon is, I don't know. You also have to wonder what the hell's going on with RCR. Like that, because Kyle Busch, I mean, they're just down overall. But Austin Dillon, you know, typically we get a few races out of him a year where it's like, okay, he has some speed. We're not seeing that at all this year. You know, Richmond was always a good racetrack for him. He finished 24th. Darlington's been a really good racetrack for him, 28th. Dover has been in good racetrack form, 27th. We've seen him, you know, have speed on these mile and a halfs. Low wear Kansas, he finished 25th. Like, just absolute garbage. And that's kind of putting it lightly for 83. Eric Jones came back from his back injury, finished 19th.
And ran worse most of the day.
Yeah. I think, which is definitely noteworthy at a track like Darlington, because that is his best track. So that's definitely a situation to keep an eye on, similar to what, you know, Alex Bowman and Chase Elliott went through last year, you know, where they had their injury and they just weren't the same when they got back on track. So definitely something to keep an eye on there with Eric Jones and Legacy Motor Club, and how they do. Before we get to talking about the All-Star race this weekend for a little bit, let's update 36 for 36, since we don't make any picks this week, the next pick being Charlotte. Massive week for you, Nick. Massive week. You needed one. You said last week you needed a great run, and you got it. You got Keselowski on the 36 for 36, earned 57 points in that race. Josevar shit the bed for me. I got 11 points. You closed the gap by 46 points. I now only have a 31-point lead 13 races into the season. Just a huge, huge I don't even know what I'm trying to say there. Great week for you. And ironically, you know, I had Kez at Texas, and he finished second. So something about us picking Keselowski and him finishing top two. But definitely a massive pick there for you in 36 for 36. Get you back on track, you know, just exactly what the doctor ordered there for you.
Yeah, and here's the thing. If we look at the races, or the drivers, I should say, we've both picked, where we picked them in different races, right? Because we picked Harrison Burton the same one. We picked Alex Bowman the same one. I have – so those drivers would be Brad Keselowski, Carson Hocevar, and I believe the 15 car are the ones we've picked at different races this year. So even though you're ahead by 31 points still, looking at just the drivers we've both picked in different races, I have 69 nice points from those three drivers, from the 15, the 6, and the 77. And you have 64. So I've actually come out ahead when we're looking at these drivers at different tracks. And it's only been three so far, right? Like everybody else, you know, you've got Bubba Wallace, you've got Joey Logano, you even took Ryan Blaney. Like, I haven't taken those guys, and I've taken guys, you know, like the 14 of Chase Briscoe. You haven't taken the 42 I took. I don't think you've taken, John Hunter Nemechek. So, like, it'll come down to these selections in the second half. Do the guys that I took early in the season score more points than those same guys that you take later in the season, and vice versa? So that's what it's going to come down to. So even though you're ahead by 31, I'm actually leading in, like, slightly, not a lot, but slightly, 5 points in, like, the different driver, or same driver, different race category right now.
Yeah. I didn't think about looking at it that way, but that's a good way to look at it.
So, long way to go, but it was definitely nice to make up the gap there and, you know, get a big win there with Keselowski. 17 stage points in the win from the number six car is probably going to be his best result all year.
Absolutely.
Even if he somehow grabs another win, I think 17 stage points is monstrous.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's the first time we've picked a winner in this 36 for 36. Not that we've picked, like, the best ones every week, but... I'm pretty sure that's the first time we picked him. I had Logano at Richmond. He finished second. But yeah.
First time somebody's cracked 50 points as well.
Yep. So yeah. I know we got a tweet about listeners being able to play along. We'll have to set that up next year.
Definitely.
Yeah. And hopefully we can get something set up for this, the bracket challenge that they're going to do next year as well.
Yeah. I wonder if Denny Hamlin said the bracket is going to be back. I don't know if he knew that NASCAR meant for 2025 or if he meant it's back for this year as well.
Right.
So, we may have to do another bracket challenge this year as well. We'll see. We'll figure it out if that gets announced by Denny Hamlin.
Yeah. I saw like a lot of people's responses to that was that, you know, Denny Hamlin deserves royalties, blah, blah, blah. Come on. Like, we all know that it was Denny's idea. We all know that that pushed it forward. But I have to give kudos to NASCAR here for actually doing it. And I honestly think TNT and Amazon had a big part of pushing it forward because it's during that time of year where, like, people start losing interest in NASCAR. So anything to spice it up is great.
Yeah.
So I just couldn't help but think, and maybe this is just, you know, me incessantly hating on Fox, but if Fox had that schedule and that where they wanted to do it, I could see them not wanting to do it just because they don't give a shit about broadcasting. Like, I think it's great that TNT and Amazon, I think they're going to do a great job with it, you know, because in addition to doing it, you have to present this well. Like, this is complicated and you have to do a good job of presenting this, the broadcast.
Exactly. World. And, you know, I think having Dale Jr. as part of that is going to be awesome. Mm-hmm. He's a guy that loves these kinds of things, just like Denny does. He loves these kind of competitions, tournaments, and he'll do a great job explaining it. And the other thing is, these races aren't just going to be tournament races. They're still going to be points-paying regular season races. Like, it's going to be a double dynamic.
Yeah, there. And it's something I quite haven't wrapped my head around yet because I don't know how that's going to affect the actual race itself. Will some of these drivers forego the optimal strategy in the actual race to try and win this $1 million, you know? And like, that just throws in a whole new dynamic of on betting, on fantasy aspect of it. Cause we could see these guys do some stupid shit just to try to advance. If they know they can't win the race,
you know, I think if you have a shot to win, you go for the shot to win. But if you're in those situations where you're kind of just running mid pack all day and whatever, you just try to do what your opponent doesn't almost. If you're an underdog or if you're a favorite, try to do what they do so that you just stay ahead of them. You know, it'll bring in that kind of dynamic, I think, for like if you're outside the top 12 or something.
Yeah, it's.
But we'll see. We don't know until.
It's kind of like the Dash for Cash in Xfinity. Mm-hmm. You know, how much do those drivers actually think about that when they're on the track, and how much does that weigh into their strategy of the race? You know, maybe we're overthinking this, and it's, you know, they're just going to do their own thing. Yeah. And I won $1 million.
I think those decisions become amplified if you make the semifinals or finals, right? But in the round of 32, 16, even the round of 8, probably not.
Well, I don't know.
Not as huge a deal.
I kind of could see like someone like a Corey LaJoie, like. Some of the backmarker teams doing something like staying out. Like, why not? Why not do the off strategy even more?
But I think if you're one of those drivers, you know, let's say William Byron or Christopher Bell or whoever who's made the final four, that's where it's like, okay, now I might want to think about just beating this guy for $1 million on the line. Not even in the semifinals, obviously not $1 million is on the line, but a chance to win $1 million. You're, all things equal, 25% chance of your expected value is $250,000 at that point. So you got to do what you can do to improve that expected value. Yeah, maybe you do that. I don't know.
Yeah. And someone like, you know, like a William Byron, depending on who he's going to get, chances are he's going to be locked into the playoffs. So if he can't win the race, why not just go for the, like we just saw, you know, Tyler Reddick said after this race at Darlington, I didn't care about.
Are you already locked into the playoffs or not?
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Wow. It's gonna be fun.
I'm glad NASCAR decided to do it. Kudos to them.
And the other rumors of, you know, NASCAR replacing the Spring Richmond race with a race in Mexico.
Yeah. So that'll be, and I don't even know like what track is in Mexico. I'm gonna sound really stupid here.
It's the Autodromo Hernandez, whatever it's called.
Is it a street course?
Hermanos Rodriguez. It IndyCar, which was formerly Champ Car and Kart, had raced there in the past. So I've definitely seen races there. Cool track. And I think maybe one of the – NASCAR Mexico. Yeah, NASCAR Back then it was Nationwide Series, ran there from 2005 to 2008. Here are the four winners of those NASCAR, now, you know, Busch Series or whatever. No, Xfinity Series, Nationwide. That series, that level series. Here are the four winners at that track. 2005, some guy named Martin Truex Jr. 2006, a guy named Denny Hamlin. 2007, Juan Pablo Montoya. In 2008, a guy named Kyle Busch. So big names won in the then Nationwide, now Xfinity Series. But that was 2005, 2008.
But it's a road course, right?
Yeah, it's a road course. And it's inside a stadium. So there's like the stadium section and then like outside the stadium part of the road course as well.
Okay. Yeah, I'm kind of looking at the track layout now. Looks like it has just a massive front stretch. And then kind of swoops around and nice. Yeah, that'd be cool. I don't know when we're going to get the schedule for 2025, but I'd assume it's going to be relatively quick. And then,
yeah, it sounds like it might be released earlier this year than normal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of that might have to do with the TV negotiations.
Yeah, someone tweeted out they were doing the math and basically saying that we might get Easter weekend off next year. But then the season shortening by a week or something. Just kind of.
Yeah. Where Pistone tweeted about that. Like, there's going to be like 28 straight weekends without a weekend off.
Which,
because it's only one off weekend and then a shortened season.
Isn't that what we deal with now? Or like last year? I know this year we have the Olympics break.
But... like last year we had two weekends off, but yeah. And then this year we get the Olympic break. But yeah, I think last year we had two weekends off.
Last year we had Father's Day off, but that was it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Oh. Then how'd the season go longer? I'm confused.
Last year the season ended on the 5th of November.
So, okay.
Yeah, this year it goes to the 10th. Yeah, goes to the second weekend.
Yeah, so it's just a schedule we've already done then.
Yeah. What do you got to whine about today?
Well, first of all, Jordan, you retweeted our friend Marissa, who, of course, is one of the owners of Aluvabella Wines, and they now will have the Orange Mimosa of the Passion brand at the Buc-ee's in Georgia. So if you live in Georgia and you listen to Stacking Denny's, go get the Orange Mimosa Passion wine when it hits the stores there. This is Jordan's favorite Aluvabella wine.
Absolutely.
It's, I think, tied for my favorite with the bourbon barrel-aged, you know, Merlot or Cab. So definitely get those. So that's what I am drinking today. So let me open it up and pour a little something. I got to do a little rinse here because I had a red wine. So let me pour the mimosa. I'm doing a nice, healthy pour because I like it.
There we go.
Big old pour. Yeah, my wine about it's going to go back to this Buescher Reddick incident, but it's not Buescher. I'm not whining about him. I'm not whining about Reddick, you know, making a bad move. Not whining about Buescher complaining about whatever. I'm whining about the Twitter people that. So, you know, obviously Reddick was at fault for hitting Chris Buescher. And Buescher was rightly upset. He did nothing wrong. But people are acting like Chris Buescher isn't allowed to complain because the way he took the lead was with Keselowski kind of walling Tyler Reddick. But that's not Buescher's fault. What is he supposed to do? Okay, I'll just give the spot back? No. They're acting like he's not allowed to be mad because he took the lead from Reddick getting walled. But he didn't do the walling of Reddick. It would be one thing if he walled Reddick and then Reddick walled him back, but they're acting like that Buescher isn't allowed to complain simply because he took the lead from his boss hitting Tyler Reddick, and I think that's asinine. And I saw a lot of it. Like, obviously Tyler Reddick fans are pretty passionate. and fans of most drivers are, but like for some reason they all seemed, I saw multiple tweets of this, multiple, just like, yeah, but he's never going to mention that he took the lead from his boss walling Reddick. Like, so?
Yeah.
I don't care.
You know what he did two laps care. Before that?
Buescher didn't do anything. Yeah.
Buescher gave Kez a massive shove to try to get the lead.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember tweeting about it because I was like, Ty Gibbs would never do that.
Yeah. So the Reddick fans are acting like, oh, well, you only got it through your boss putting Tyler Reddick in the wall, so that, you know, you shouldn't complain. But that's not Buescher's fault at all. He can't control what his boss does.
Yeah.
That's, I don't know. I found it really, and I can understand if you're kind of a, you know, a Reddick fan, and you feel like, man, Buescher came at Tyler aggressively and all that stuff, and probably a little too aggressive or whatever. I get it. You're allowed to be a fan of your driver, but like, that line of reasoning just doesn't resonate with me.
Yeah, that...
at all.
No. That doesn't... Yeah, I don't get that at all, but...
So, that's... It's a short whine about it, but that's my whine about it. And I don't get it. Like, so Buescher's not allowed to complain that he got driven into the wall after doing absolutely nothing wrong himself. Makes no sense. Makes no sense.
I'm with you. I don't get it. I don't get it. Yeah, shout out to Luvabella Winery, as always, for sponsoring this podcast. Brew Kettle. Need to get some more of those beers. I want some more of the chocolate peanut butter porter. It's a really good beer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to throw a little bit of a curveball here. I don't have anything to whine about. I don't have a single negative thing to say about this sport right now, which is noteworthy because I can't even think of something small to bitch about, which is,
I can. And I think it goes,
give me something, off of what you're give me saying. Something to go off of.
I think it goes off what you're saying. Right now, things are going so well.
Yeah.
But, and remember 2022, we were like, man, is this the best season of all time or whatever? Mm-hmm. And it was pretty close. Like, for me, it's 11 or 22. And the start of this season, first few races, I was thinking that. And then we had those terrible races. So we had, like, a really bad Martinsville. We had Richmond, which wasn't very good. Phoenix was, like, fine. But it was – the season got really brought down there in a few race stretch. And people forgot that. We've had two amazing races, maybe three or so amazing races. Remember how bad Talladega was? Like, this is not one of the best seasons of all time. I understand you don't have anything to whine about right now, and it makes sense because there really isn't. But my whine about it is the fact that people are saying, well, now that we don't have anything to whine about, this is one of the greatest seasons of all time. No, it's not.
No. No, because we're still seeing.
I got you covered there, but it kind of came from you prompting me with that, where there's not a lot to. I agree with that. There isn't a lot to whine about right now, but it's not one of the greatest seasons of all time yet.
No, and
it could be in the discussion if it keeps getting better, but we're not there right now.
I think it's been a great season so far. We had the Atlanta finish. We had Kansas. We had, absolutely, you know, Darlington.
And I'm not diminishing any of that stuff. Yeah, yeah. But when we're talking seasons as a whole.
Yeah, yeah. There's definitely a ton of recency bias going on right now with Kansas and Darlington. Mm-hmm. I do have something quick to whine about. I just thought of it.
There we go.
I knew I could think of something. Can we have one fucking week without massive chalk in DFS? I'm fucking sick of it. Holy shit. This week, Gregson. I feel like it's always a Stuart Haas car. Gregson, you know, fucking up in qualifying and starting dead last. Like, it's just not fun to play DFS when we have these massive chalks. And I feel like, I honestly feel like 80% of the races this year has had massive chalk. It's like somewhere. It's just, man. So yeah, that's my whine about it. Quick and easy. just give us 1 week where
It definitely feels like it's every week these days.
It is. And,
but I think that also speaks to a little bit how much closer the field is, because you get these big names back there so often.
Mm-hmm.
we wouldn't have been saying this 2017, 2016, right? You just always have those Josh Wises or Josh Bulickies or Joey Gases that were just god-awful, and Cole Witts, or, you know, it just stunk up the show and just sat back there in the 30s. And, like, so it made these super rare chalk or super chalky weeks, like, more rare. Now it's more common because we don't, I mean, we got Justin Haley finishing in the top 10 and Kaz Grala finishing inside, or, you know, near the top 15 in Rick Ware cars that used to just always qualify in the back four spots, right?
Mm-hmm. And finish there too.
Yeah. And Finn, of course, finished there. So the field's a lot closer than it was several years ago. And so I think this is something that, unfortunately, is probably a trend that's going to stick around. Mm-hmm. And I think it's exacerbated by the small amount of practice time we have.
Yeah. Especially like when we see these qualifying issues, like that's definitely a factor. But like I'm kind of looking at their most recent races. So we had Gregson last week starting 36th. You could throw Josh Berry in there, starting 33rd.
Chase Elliott 31st.
Starting 31st. A week before that at Kansas, we had Byron that qualified 36th, Keselowski 30th. A week before that was Dover. We had Chase Elliott starting 29th. We had Christopher Bell starting 33rd. Talladega, we had Larson starting dead last. Gregson starting 36th. Yeah. Stenhouse 33rd. Ross Chastain 32nd. Texas, we had Kyle Busch starting 35th. Stenhouse was in the 30s. Like, literally, I can't think of the last time that – that we did not have a massive chalk driver, which is just give us 1 week, DFS gods. Just like let me use my brain for 1 week, because it gets such you get so on autopilot when you have these fucking chalk. Because then like you either fade it or you go you know you're with it, and yeah. You know how I do. I did not fade Gregson. He was my highest owned this last week, and actually, Haley was my second highest owned in my lineups. So I was glad to see him with a top 10. But
I like Taylor this week for sure. I didn't write him up only because, you know, there was so much other chalk and just I'm not going to write up every single driver, but I really like Taylor this week. Hey, it was a DFS this week in terms of like just the rosters and roster construction was just kind of it didn't look fun.
No. No, I ended up on Sunday. Like I wasn't going to do any lineups heading into Sunday. And then Sunday afternoon rolled around and I just started like messing on my phone, like doing one lineup. Cause I usually just throw one in the big GPP so I can go in and easily grab the percentage or ownerships. And I was like putting one together and I was like, I could have some fun. Like just doing like slight variations of the same lineup. So I did like five lineups and then just did slight variations of them and did them 20 times and put them in the, whatever the mini the $4 one or whatever.
Oh yeah. That one.
Yeah. The 20 max. So that's where it was. Like typically if I really start looking at a slate, I can find a way to be like, oh, this could be fun. You know, it gives me something to root for. And ironically, I was ending up on a ton of DFS lineups with Haley and Gilliland. So doing those two really cheap options and it opened up the door so much.
For I like Gilliland too. I thought Gilliland was going to be higher owned than he actually was. And I thought McDowell was going to be more under owned than he was. So I liked, you know, I was originally considering Todd Gillen as my Pulmnar pick of the week and I switched to McDowell, but I liked both of those guys. I mean, and Gillen had the better race and the better car and everything, but McDowell had the better finish and ended up being a better DFS play. And that's the whole point is like, you know, the discrepancy in ownership versus the range of outcomes can be too high sometimes. They have similar ranges of outcomes, and one guy's 20%, one guy's 7% or something, then they shouldn't be that far apart in ownership. So that's the whole idea, the theory of some of these things. So and it's definitely not Talladega theory, but it still kind of applies in spots like this. If you have two drivers with a similar range of outcomes, now of course, salary-adjusted range of outcomes, then yeah, they probably shouldn't be as far apart as maybe they're projected to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Gilliland came in quite a bit higher than I thought he would be. I'm just now looking at ownerships. 15.48% for Gilly.
Yeah, that I had him, I think at like 18 or something ridiculous. I forget what, but. Yeah, and that's why I didn't make it my Palmer pick of the week, because at 15%, I'm not looking to go be like, well,
yeah,
play him a ton, you know, because he's 15%. If he was 5% projected for me, I would have. But I think I had McDowell in the single digits and Gilliland in that 16 or 18% range of ownership.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, check out Luvabella Wineries, luvabella.com. Of course, the Brew Kettle as well. Make sure you check them out. Great supporters of this show. Allows us to talk about shit and whine about it. We are on to the All-Star race, though, at North Wilkesboro Speedway. I think we're both on the same page here. We're kind of looking at this as an off weekend. We don't really care about this race. It's going to be cool to watch, I guess. But as far as betting, as far as fantasy, I'm not super stoked about it. I will note, I do have a bet in. I did put a bet in today. Ross Chastain plus 100 over Kyle Busch, just because RCR has been so god-awful on short tracks this year. I did hit that one. But other than that, like, I even looked at, when I saw the opening lines drop, I was like, wow, Larson at 9-1? Really? Like, something wanted me to fucking bet Larson, I'll tell you that. But I didn't.
Yep.
Because I couldn't believe he was 9-1.
I will say, you know, obviously I talked to Jim Saunas a lot, and he had a couple values in his model, but I'm not modeling this race. Yeah, it is a track we've been to once before.
That was a completely different track.
And it's unique, and it's completely repaved, which will completely change how it handles. And now we have two different tires. Yep. And a weird format in a short field. Mama, how are you going to model that? And, like, I love Jim, but, like, I'm not modeling it. I don't care to model it. I'm not. I will have some kind of generic projections for DFS just to have them. Right. But I'm not putting any faith in them. You know, because people will ask, oh, here are your projections. Well, honestly, I don't think you should really play DFS this weekend. That would be my response if I was, you know. I don't care.
Yeah.
If it thinks they know it's going to happen in this race, is lying to themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. The format of this is, we're going to have the open. We're going to have practice on Friday, qualifying on Friday. Then we're going to have heat races. Then we're going to have the open on Sunday night, which is going to get two drivers in. And then a third driver is going to get in via fan vote. So it's going to give us 20 cars in the All-Star race. And then they'll do a 200-lap All-Star race, mandatory caution at lap 100, where teams will have to do a four-tire pit stop. And like you said, they can do different types of tires. So we have the softer tire, the prime tire, and then the option tire, or whatever they call it. Then there's another caution on lap 150. And I think they have to. I already forgot the format. I think they have to pit again, but I don't think it's. I think you just have to fuel.
I honestly haven't even looked at the format.
Oh no, okay.
I can't help you here because I haven't looked at the format.
Yeah, I'm trying to pull it now. I literally just read it before we went live, and now my brain is doing brain fart on it.
Here's the other thing: why is NASCAR making it so hard to find the format?
Right. So yeah, it just says at the lap 100 break, teams must perform a four tire pit stop using any tire they're choosing. Doesn't say anything about the lap 150 break, though, and what they need to do.
What's the format for qualifying for the All-Star race?
Qualifying is the same as normal.
No. Sorry. I mean to advance from the open to the main. Because you said two drivers will make it plus the fan. How did the two drivers make it?
The 100-lap open will have an all-star caution at lap 50, at which time teams must perform a four-tire pit stop. At the end, three drivers will advance to the all-star race. The top two race finishers, first and second, and then the fan.
I was going to say, because that – because like in the past,
Okay, we're back. So as far as the All-Star race goes, this is also on Sunday night. Like, I'm not excited about this race at all. You know what I'm excited for? I don't have to spend my whole Saturday doing all content. But the time crunch on Sunday is going to suck, but that's going to be nice for me. I'm going to finally have, like a day where I don't have to worry about it on Saturday. But yeah, as far as this race goes, not looking to bet it, not looking to go crazy. I'm looking to refresh and get ready for the Coca-Cola 600. But with that being said, we might as well make some picks to win, even though neither of us know what to expect heading into this race weekend what's going on entirely. But we'll make some picks. I think it's my turn to go first. And I guess it's my turn to go first next week at Charlotte too. But I understand that this track is repaved. And at first, when odds dropped, I was like, why the hell wouldn't we bet Larson 9-1? Like that's what struck me. But with that being said, and with how strong this team has been on short tracks every single race this season, I'm going with Denny Hamlin to win the All-Star race.
Yeah, it's a good pick. I'm going to go with the guy that should have beat Denny Hamlin in the first short track race of the season at the Busch Light Clash, and that's Ty Gibbs.
Nice.
I'll go with Ty Gibbs to win the All-Star race, and he's not even in the main.
Yeah, so that was one bet that Greg Mathurin messaged me about. I'm not sure where he got it, but he had top three odds, anyone in the open to finish top three in the All-Star race, 16-1, which, chances are that's going to be Ty Gibbs.
A good car if you're winning the open.
Ty Gibbs and Bubba Wallace, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I like that.
Maybe
that's what I should bet.
Right, something like that. But yeah.
I like that. Good callback.
Wouldn't that be something to see Ty Gibbs get his first win in a non-points paying event?
I know, right? Now, my pick is honestly terrible because he has to drive through the whole field to do it. But I guess if there ever was going to be a time, it would be with two tires or, two different tire compounds, I should say. Mm-hmm. And a repaved track where he was the best at the – I shouldn't say repaved Coliseum. It's just always newly – set down, so it's always new. So I'm gonna go. I don't think it's a good pick because he has to make his way in from the open, but it's also race. I don't really care. By the way, how did our picks to win do for Darlington?
Yeah, so you had Byron and I had Truex. So Byron finished sixth, Truex with that 25th place. So we're now pretty much dead even in average finish between each other. Or like comparing each other when it comes to picks to win. So through the first 13 races, my average finish is 10.77. Yours is 10.85. So,
yeah,
super close,
almost identical.
Yeah,
we've had. Does that count the clash or any of that? It's just regular season races.
Just regular season races. Yep.
Yeah. So your finishes has summed to 140 and minus some to 141.
How'd you do that so quick?
10.85 times 13 and 10.77 times 13.
I'm in the spreadsheet that has all of it and you're not in there. And I was like, wait a second. How'd you do that? But now that
you said
sense.
The average finishes, just take the average finish times the number of races.
Is that how that works?
Yeah, so we've finished one place apart aggregate all season so far.
That is insane.
Yeah.
That is insane. Crazy.
And I feel like that's kind of our 36 for 36. Like, even though we're 31 points apart, again, I still have the better roster overall left.
Yep.
And if you look at, like I said, the drivers we picked the same of in different tracks, we're only 5 points apart. And we're only 5 points apart for the drivers we picked the same of for all five of our drivers, because we had two drivers where we picked them at the same race, or maybe three. We had Priest, Burton, and Bowman, where we picked them all at the same. So of the six drivers we've picked the same of, we're only 5 parts a point in those.
Yeah. Man. I'm interested to see where you, like, how many points you get out of the 51, because I've picked the 51, you haven't. And then someone like I got 49 points out of Logano at Richmond, whether you're able to get close to that. But then again,
like, you took like Logano and Blaney, Bubba, like, those are definitely some solid names. And you got 41 points from Blaney, you got 49 from Joey, some pretty big scores there.
And then Bubba shit the bed at Kansas, but really 23-11 did entirely.
Yeah. You took Ross, like,
yeah, I only got 25 points out of Ross. Yep.
It'll be fun. Yeah, I feel like we're pretty much neck and neck with each other in both formats. Picks to win and 36 for 36.
Absolutely. But the only leg up I have on you on 36 for 36 is you picked Reddick already.
Yeah.
But that's the only little gap I have. I can't
Reddick
afford
got 34 for me, which for Coda, it's not amazing. You know, for a road course, I'd rather have him win the race and get stage points, or,
right,
you know, at least finish in the 40s, like finish second or third and get 11 stage points or something. So, not ideal.
No. But if you don't have anything else, I don't have anything else for this episode.
Dude, it's the All-Star Race. Unique track. Newly repaved. New tire compounds. Multiple tire compounds. Unique format. Fewer cars. Like, really? It's a week off. We need a week off. So we're taking a week off for the most part. Barring little things here and there. Like, I have to do truck model, because they're racing here this weekend as well for a real points paying race. Mm-hmm. But they don't have multiple tire compounds or a short field or things like that. So,
yeah, that's the thing with the All-Star Race on DraftKings. 20 car final field, and you have six of them. Like, this, this is not going to be fun.
It's brutal. Yeah, like I said, it's a good week to take off from DFS, in my opinion. And betting, honestly.
I agree.
Recharge the batteries, come back strong for the Indy 500 and the Coca-Cola 600.
Absolutely.
And Monaco, if you're into that Formula One crap.
Kyle Kirkwood winning the Indy 500.
He's 25-1 right now.
Do we think Kyle Larson has a chance at winning?
Yes, I do think he does. Unlike Kurt Busch, right? So Kurt Busch, handful of years ago, he was in an Andretti car, did the double. Kyle Larson's built different. He's younger than when Kurt Busch did it, but B, he's just got monstrous upside and is willing to hang it all out. Kurt, I think, was kind of doing it to just like do it, you know?
Yeah.
And it was exciting. It was awesome to see him do it. But even though Kurt Busch finished, I think it was sixth, he never felt like a contender. And he never passed anybody. He just rode in line and let other people in front of him make mistakes. But he never really passed anybody. But like, Larson is Kyle Larson. He's going to do everything he can to win this race. So I do think he has a chance to win. And plus, he's in an Arrow McLaren car. Those are some of the fastest cars that we'll see. So, you know, put a fast driver in a fast car, he may not be the one that's leading at the end. But if fuel strategy or crashes happen at the end, who knows what'll happen. Last year's Indy 500 had three really late red flags. So bunch of restarts. You never know what'll happen then when the field gets jumbled back up. So yeah, absolutely, Kyle Larson does. But I did bet Kirkwood 25-1, not because it's recommended, but because I'm going to bet Kyle Kirkwood every year in the Indy 500 forever. And so I think 25 is probably the longest we'll see from him. So that's why I took 25, because I wanted to. I think this is probably the point where he's at his longest.
What is Kyle Larson's odds?
That depends on the book, but it's anywhere from the teens to like 7, I've seen, I think, in some other books that are probably holding a lot more.
Right.
But, I mean, honestly, if you give me Kyle Kirkwood versus Kyle Larson matchup, I'll be really happy. I would love to bet that matchup.
Where would that line need to be for you to bet it? On which side?
I don't know. It depends on how practices and qualifyings and all those things go. I just want to bet Kyle versus Kyle because it'd be fun.
Yeah.
Bet my favorite driver against the NASCAR driver.
Yeah.
Plus, they're both named Kyle.
Well, maybe if some book will be listening and we'll put those odds out.
I will say Jeffrey Benson from Circa liked my tweet when I tweeted
Do it.
Come on, Jeffrey. Let's go. Talk to those guys there and talk to your odds makers and get it up on the board.
Yep.
You will have my action.
There we go. Customer for life.
That's right.
All right. We'll wrap this one up. Good luck to anybody that plays fantasy, that bets on this all-star race. We'll be back a little more excited next week for Coca-Cola 600 in the second half of the regular season. But enjoy this weekend's race at North Wilkesboro, all-star race, all-star open. And good luck. See you guys.